Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. In this episode, Lars talks with cloud specialists Thomas Vitale and Lasse Højgaard about their day-to-day work and experience with cloud native, Kubernetes, and all things related. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create for a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Chicago, Amsterdam, London, and Copenhagen, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hi, my name is Lars. I'm from the GoTo team. We're doing a GoTo Unscripted episode here at GoTo Copenhagen. We're here in person finally again, and it's great to see our speakers. I am joined today by Thomas Vitale and Lasse Højgaard. If you wouldn't mind just saying a few words about yourselves so that people watching know who you are. Thomas, maybe you go first.
Yes. Hi, I'm Thomas. I work as a senior software engineer at Systematic, a Danish software company. I'm really passionate about anything cloud native technologies. I like working with Spring and contributing to open source projects.
Okay, and you, Lasse?
Yeah, my name is Lasse Højgaard. I work at Trifork in Aarhus as a cloud specialist, I think it's called. Focused in around Kubernetes and building cloud native environments and platforms, stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. So the topic today, as people might hear from your descriptions, is cloud native and Kubernetes and all things related. So my first question, I think, is Kubernetes and cloud native, is that, do you think that is a concern for application developers, or is that more of an infrastructure concern?
Well, ideally, they shouldn't have to worry too much about the underlying runtime. Okay. Like if you're running old school Java project, you may be running on a JBoss, or you may be running on Tomcat or whatever, and you know that you're running on it, but you're not really concerned with it unless you're actually configuring it, right? And I think that we should strive for getting the same level of experience in Kubernetes. So I think a key term is to have an internal platform and a platform as a service, either a real platform as a service from one of the cloud providers, or then you build one yourself if your company is big enough to do that. So take away the complexity and then just let the app developers do whatever they need to do to fulfill their jobs. I think that's the key.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think developers should have a nice, it's called developer experience, which is also one of the territories where a lot of vendors are really fighting each other to provide the best developer experience, because now Kubernetes is a given, but mm-hmm. it's more of an operational concern. So developers want to focus on business logic. So really, we should strive to provide the best experience to developers. So yeah. Hiding a lot of complexity. And in that regards, for example, Knative built on top of Kubernetes already provides a nicer abstraction for developers, so without considering a lot of different concerns that are still good to know as a developer, like the main concepts about mm-hmm. Kubernetes, because it's a different environment. But then the daily job, yeah, it's really important that yeah. we can focus not on the infrastructure, but on what provides value, the product.
Yeah, I agree. You need to know the constraints of the platform that you're running on. Like, if you're on Kubernetes, then pods can be rescheduled. You can have multiple replicas of them. You need to provide a health check, those kind of things. You need to set aside memory requests and limits. So those are the constraints that you're working within, and that gives you some challenges when you're doing an app. Like, you can't rely on just writing things to a file, and then your pod restarts and everything is gone. Like, so you need to know the constraints of the environment, but other than that, you shouldn't be too concerned about it. Yeah. What are you doing in Systematic? Are you building an internal platform?
We are doing that. As we are a large company, so we have different projects at different level of what we can call a cloud native transformation. In particular, in my project, we are really aiming at moving to using a platform which provides a great developer experience, because of course we want to be able to focus on the business logic. So at the company level, we are working on such a platform with also that capability in mind. So not just aimed at operators, but also the interface part, the user interface, mm-hmm. which is really critical, I think, for having a successful platform. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's, like you said, developer experience is like the next big thing. Like we have Kubernetes, that's, as you said, a given, and we have multiple vendors coming up with different ways of enhancing that developer experience. We have something like Backstage from Spotify that's now open source. It's like an internal Backstage where you can deploy your app and you can monitor your apps and have templates and those kind of things. And that's one of them, right? Then the next thing is like how, if I'm going to Kubernetes, do I run a Kubernetes cluster locally when I'm doing my development and orchestrating my services in there? What are you doing there? And I think that depends on the size of the project.
Yeah, that's also an interesting aspect, the inner loop for mm-hmm. for developers. So do we really want to run Kubernetes? If we do, then we need that knowledge also spread out across developers. So sometimes it's not really worth it if we have big infrastructures, big architectures. So a tool like Telepresence, for example, that allows to get this the whole application running on a cluster somewhere, and then we can just run on our computers only the components we're working on. And then the traffic is routed and proxied through the cluster. So we don't have to install Kubernetes and not even think about it. I think that's a really cool tool that we have.
Yeah, it is. It is, and it routes the traffic from the live cluster down to your local machine, so you can attach a debugger.
Yeah, and that's the ultimate experience with environment parity. So we are really using the real thing. We are not simulating maybe a local cluster with different features, but we have the real thing. We have all the nice features from the platform as well, like maybe observability, for example. We can check tracing and monitoring.
Yeah, and it's like you said. When we are running on a platform like this, it kind of becomes a challenge. Like if you're doing DevOps, and I think you should, then the app developers will also be running it in production, and they will be reacting to alerts, and they will be on call for that application, and that forces you to have at least a tiny amount of knowledge mm-hmm. about Kubernetes. Like, is this problem that we're seeing, is that related to Kubernetes, or is it related to my application? And maybe you should also have a platform developer on call as well, but you need a cursory knowledge mm-hmm. of Kubernetes as well.
What are your thoughts on having, or maybe designing a self-service API for developers, so to make things even clearer, like what is responsibility for the product team and what is for responsible the platform team, and having also a better understanding of, if I get a call, so is it me? Can I fix it, or do I need someone else with a different set of skills to help me figure out what's going wrong?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I think that everybody right now is running towards Kubernetes, and now we have Kubernetes, and it's all great, and now we're building abstractions on top of it. So you in Systematic, you're building an abstraction on top of it. We are building another abstraction, and Backstage is another abstraction. Like, what is an app? What's a deployable unit of execution? Mm-hmm. And we see this plethora of different definitions of abstractions, right? Or different levels of abstractions. So I'm all for having an internal API to have a self-service platform as a service in your company, but I think we should be aware of what is outside of your own company, because you may be reinventing the wheel. Mm-hmm. We, in my company, we are doing something slightly different. We are moving closer to the hosting provider, actually, the ones that set up the cluster, mm-hmm. because I'm not setting up a cluster. I have infrastructure guys who knows more about networks than I do, mm-hmm. and knows more about disks and mm-hmm. RAM and all of that, those kind of things. And we are actually moving those closer to the app team. So that, for instance, people sitting in a network operating center, they can react to an alert, like saying, okay, this application is now returning 500. And mm-hmm. it used to not do 500. We haven't done a deployment in a month, so something's off here.
Yeah.
And they can see that alert and kind of have to determine, is this platform related or is this application related? So it's the same dashboard for platform metrics, platform alerts, as application alerts mm-hmm. and application metrics. I think that's where we want to go, because Kubernetes is so complex, super complex, that you can spend your entire career just focusing on that, right?
Yeah.
And at the same time, application development is also super complex, and you need to focus on that. So quite quickly, we have this dev and ops parity again, and we don't want that. We want those guys to be the same guy, ideally, right? And if that's not possible, at least they should be in the same room. So that's my viewpoint.
Yeah, I think that's really important, like the whole DevOps philosophy of combining people with different skills, different roles, and together collaborating to the same goal. Mm. Yeah, that's really important. And yeah, there's always the risk to end up having these silos. Now we used to have development and operations. Now maybe we define this product and platform silos, but we really don't want to do that probably. And I think that's also why it's important having this API between the two teams. Mm. But I like what you said about not reinventing the wheel. I think it's really important. We have out there, like, the cloud native landscape is like, wow. It can be even scary the first time we look at it, but there's so many great open source tools out there that we can use. So I think it's important also to, not reinventing the wheel and maybe adopting some standards that are, starting to being used a lot. And I mentioned earlier Knative, for example, that is used a lot by Red Hat, by VMware, by Google to build their serverless platforms, for example. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also a nice abstraction to have in a more standardized way, so we're not reinventing the wheel. And then maybe on top of that, adding some other tools that we can really embrace. Of course, customizing a bit, but if we keep the interface based on open source projects, then we really make things easier for everyone, I think, because when we have a problem, we can we have a large community available all over the world. We can talk with them. We can even be part of the solution and contributing to the open source projects that we use to build the platforms.
Yeah, and I sometimes think of the Kubernetes, the cloud native landscape, as like an app store for off-the-shelf software. And it used to be that if you wanted to set up a database, you need to go to that vendor and ask them, could you please help me set up that database? And it has like specific requirements for network and memory and CPU, and it has its own configuration language, and it had its own requirements. Like I need multiple replicas, I need to be behind a reverse proxy or whatever it was. And all of those different applications, whatever it might be, had their own configuration language, had their own specialized needs. And I think a tool like Helm, which is often criticized for obvious reasons, it really unionizes configuration. Like you can template with Helm, you can template a configuration file, for instance, whether that be JSON or it be YAML or it's like a Java properties file. You can use that, so the interface becomes the Helm values file. So that's like the same configuration language that you're using. And now you're just building small pieces of adapters around your configuration file, and then you have the same interface for all of them. I think that's really, really cool. And it's the same kind of, it's the same way you deploy it, like Helm install, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's the interface becomes better, and the developer experience becomes better. And you can do that for almost all of the tools in the cloud native landscape. I think that's really cool. And it lowers the barrier to entry too. Like if I wanted to run a highly available NATS cluster on my Kubernetes cluster, like that's Helm installed and then set replicas to 3, then it's highly available, it's sharded and all of those things. If I wanted to do that in the old days, oh boy.
Oh yeah.
Oh boy. Like I needed to set up 3 different VMs and connect the network between them, and then I needed to start the service on all of them, and they needed to join in some way over the network with a token, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole new world now, and it feels natural for developers because we are used to install tools from our operating system using apt on Linux or maybe Homebrew on macOS. Mm-hmm. And yeah, with Helm we get the same experience, so we don't have to learn a new approach.
Yeah.
But the result is just so powerful, I guess. Just a command and you get maybe a high available Redis cluster. Mm-hmm. It's great.
It is great, and it's also zero downtime deployments, and you can do rolling upgrades. Yeah. You can do all those kind of things that is like before Kubernetes, it was kind of hard, and all of the servers needed to be patched. And I hope you remembered your patch windows, because there was always in the middle of the night, right? from midnight to 12 on the 31st of whatever month, you had a patch window. Now you can just do it because things can react to that.
Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So I'd like to touch a little bit on the migration story. So if you're not really doing Kubernetes, cloud native yet, you've mentioned that there's a lot of complexity involved, and you've also mentioned that there's a lot of benefits. So what kind of trade-offs do you think should be considered before you do that? And do you have any sort of good advice for people wanting to take their old school Rails monolith into that kind of ecosystem?
Well, I'd like to say first that like usually, of course, we associate cloud native with Kubernetes, but we can be cloud native even without Kubernetes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's the most popular choice, but in a lot of situations, we are really good with going with platform as a service provided by cloud vendors instead of working with Kubernetes, because maybe the use case is not that complex. So maybe adding Kubernetes might be too much. And I like what Cornelia Davis, we work CDO, says about cloud and cloud native. Like, cloud is where the computation happens, and cloud native is about how we build software that runs on the cloud and takes advantage of the features. So I think the first part, or at least from a developer point of view, the first part of a migration would be focusing on making the application cloud native. So the 12-factor methodology, for example, comes to mind as the first step. So being sure that we work with stateless applications, that we have externalized configuration, so we don't have problems with files and all those traditional ways that really don't play nice in a cloud environment. And even without moving directly to the cloud, just by doing that, I think we can make deployments and operations easier, because now we have really a full set of standardized practices to deal with cloud-native applications. That's already just by doing that, so changing the way that we build applications can help. And after that, of course, if we once we start with a cloud-native application or future-to-be cloud-native application, then migrating to Kubernetes involves a lot the platform and help from the platform team, and being sure that the interface is clear for developers, so how to take advantage of these new technologies and new ways of managing applications.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Should I be excited or afraid of AI? The answer is yes, it's both.
Things are going to look so different in the next couple years. You will not be ready for the disruptions that are going to come.
I'm Jeff Nielsen, host of Digital Disruption, the go-to podcast for technology leaders.
Our generation's conflict, I think, is going to be emotional, not economic.
The companies that are going to win are the ones that have a couple of characteristics.
Stay ahead of the curve with Digital Disruption, available now on your favorite podcast platform.
Yeah, I agree. Like, if you're not cloud native, you have a monolith, like, fix the basics first. Fix your configuration. Fix your logging, fix your metrics, like those kind of things. And you can do that in your current environment and get a better running application. And another thing I want to mention is that you should also take a look at your test suites. If you have no tests, then moving to Kubernetes, I wouldn't recommend it, right? So that's it's often mentioned as an afterthought, like, all right, we need to write some tests. But it's crucial if you want to go for cloud native and you want to go to Kubernetes and to continuous delivery, and we want to go faster, but you need the test to prove that you're not breaking things all the time. And chances are, if you have a monolith, maybe your tests are not that good, maybe you have highly coupled stuff that interacts in strange ways, and that application is not it's not suitable to be moved to Kubernetes, right? Because that just adds more complexity. Now you're doing network calls to do methods, for instance, or you are now at the you're at the mercy of the Kubernetes scheduler. Like, okay, so now you're having a running application, it gets sent a kill, gets sent a sick term by Kubernetes because it's going to be relocated to another worker node. Like, if your application can't handle that, then don't go to Kubernetes, right? Because it'll just add more problems.
Yeah, exactly.
It will.
Then sometimes, like, when talking about cloud native migration, usually we talk about splitting the monolith into microservices. Maybe that's not a requirement, I would say, because sometimes we think that we can solve some problems by moving to microservices. But as you said, if we have this really coupled monolith where the domain, we are not thinking about the domain, but everything is just entangled together, moving to microservices really won't help because we would end up having a distributed monolith, and that will be even more difficult to handle in Kubernetes, because then you have problems that some applications need to start before others. You have all this coupling also at deployment time, and it's not really suitable for Kubernetes. So I think it's really important to understand when it's a it's a good idea to move to Kubernetes.
Yeah, and I think if nothing else, microservices, the one benefit that they give you is that they are independently deployable. Like that's the one thing that microservices gives you, that you can make a change in one part of the system, and it, you only need to deploy that one thing. So my point is that if you have a if you've gone to microservices, let's say that, and all of your applications need to be deployed at the same time because they need to have the same version of whatever XML parser or whatever. That's not microservices. That's a distributed monolith.
Yes, and it's a mess.
It is a mess. It is a mess. Yeah. It is a mess, yeah. And one, I would say, anti-pattern that I often see is that you add this common library that has common business logic that goes across all of your microservices. And now you're dealing with versioning of that library in like 20 different microservices. And quite soon it becomes that you need to deploy all these microservices at the same time because you have some business logic in your common library, and that's not good. And it becomes too tightly coupled again.
Yeah, I think sometimes this the don't repeat yourself principle that becomes an anti-pattern because we want to follow it like completely, but then microservices really sometimes it's not that bad to duplicate code because then we have coupling, and that's not how things work in Kubernetes then.
Yeah, I think it was a Danish company that made a tool for actually copying and pasting code into different repos for each microservice. That may be a little bit overpowered, but the idea is that the common library that they were injecting into those services, it didn't prevent one microservice from being deployed before another one, and there was no hard coupling between them. I think that's the point.
Yeah, so migration tip, I would say that it's important to start small, especially if it's something new that in the team, these technologies, start with a small component, consider the 12-factor methodology and the principles to make the application cloud native, and then maybe start moving that application to Kubernetes as an experiment, maybe on an internal environment, and see how it goes and learn, get feedback. I think that's really critical.
It is.
Before committing to moving everything to be cloud native and to Kubernetes, because we might learn something that we didn't know at the beginning that might say maybe Kubernetes not the best idea in our case. Or maybe too expensive, and
And I agree totally, because what we want to avoid at all costs almost is to have a big bang rewrite. Like management has decided that Kubernetes and microservices is the greatest thing ever, so now we're going to refactor and rewrite all of our services, our old monolith that actually has value. We're going to rewrite that in a microservices pattern, and we can't deliver any new features for the next 6 months or a year, right? We don't want to do that. We want to deliver value as soon as we possibly can, and that could be taking out the one thing that is actually the least coupled to the rest of the system, moving that into Kubernetes, and having the old system call into that, right? Because then you have that one service that you can now you have more flexibility in that one service. You can do rolling upgrades, you can do experimentation on that one service, right? And then you can like slowly chip away at the monolith and move it over. But you want to deliver value as fast as possible, because there's there's people who are paying you and giving you a budget. They expect results, and you can't say, "Oh, you get results in 12 months." And that's a recipe for disaster. It is.
I think value should be the first thing we discuss about. It's not like, shall we move to Kubernetes, but what is the value that we want to provide to customers, to the business? And then at that point, we can see if Kubernetes matches that kind of value that we want to deliver. Because if we don't need to scale, or we don't need specific resilience requirements that Kubernetes provides, then maybe it doesn't make sense to move to Kubernetes. So I think that starting with the value proposition really helps focusing on the actual value that we are providing with the software rather than the technology. And sometimes it's easy to get caught into the technology discussion, especially in cloud native with all those tools that we have in the landscape. But at the end of the day, we want to provide value, of course.
Yeah.
Do you think those tips, do they apply to greenfield projects as well? I mean, we've just been talking about moving existing code and migrating that into a Kubernetes cluster, for instance. What would your tips be around greenfield projects? Is it worth it to sort of spend the time up front to get a cluster up and running and start from there? Or would you also sort of start with something small and then later see if it makes sense to move it into Kubernetes?
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
Yeah. I have done the Kubernetes first approach before. And that's because, like, that's what I know. So that's easy for me to do. That's a low-hanging fruit. Running a Kubernetes cluster for me is easy, right? And developing on Kubernetes is also easy for me, so I can do it immediately. But I would. You could also just go for a serverless application, just running on Cloud Run or Lambda or whatever, and get the value out. Like, that's what you want. But if you base your application in Greenfield or not, if you base that on the 12-factor app, you're in a better position to move to Kubernetes in the near future.
Yeah, I would also embrace the cloud native principles for building the application. But of course, if the team already has knowledge about Kubernetes, already has a platform that can be used, then it's okay to go with that. But I'm thinking about startups, maybe starting a new product. You really want to get the product out there. Time to market is critical.
Yes.
So probably if you don't have already a platform and an established process to using it, it's not a good idea. There's already platform as a services down there from Azure, from VMware, from Google, Red Hat. So just by following the cloud native principles, 12-factor, you can use that platform directly. So you can focus on the new thing that the startup is working on, the business logic. And then maybe at some point you decide to move to Kubernetes. But at that point, the migration is seamless because you already followed all the principles that are required in order to play nice in a Kubernetes environment.
Another thing I was wondering is, you mentioned before the number of tools available in the ecosystem, and I think that's seen sort of an explosive growth over the last couple of years. Do you think that's sort of stabilizing? Are we still in a sort of period of rapid expansion, or are things evening out a little bit?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Now in its fifth season, Inspiring Tech Leaders is the podcast that talks about technology strategies, challenges, and breakthroughs shaping today's digital world. Each week, Inspiring Tech Leaders brings you technology reviews and interviews with visionary CIOs, CTOs, and industry pioneers. Whether you're leading a tech team or just love innovation, Inspiring Tech Leaders is your go-to source for inspiration and real-world advice. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform.
I think we see some stabilization.
Okay.
I think we have, if you go to the tech radar from, I can't remember.
ThoughtWorks.
There are some technologies that you can adopt right now, and they are stable and they are well-defined, and we know what they do. For instance, Kubernetes is stable, and we know what it does. And Terraform, we know what that does, and it has a business value as well. So we see some stabilization, but it's also rapidly expanding. So we have competing message queues, we have competing standards for tracing and metrics, and all those things, right? So I would take a look at the tech radar and see, like, are there a solid foundation that I can build my platform on? Mm-hmm. And then we don't want to stagnate either. So we need to have and plan for experimentation. Like, okay, maybe we build our app on whatever language. There's a new language with a new framework. Let's try that out in one microservice as an experiment.
Yeah.
And if you just say, okay, let's build the one platform to rule them all and just build that one and forget about it, that's not going to work because things get deprecated and you have vulnerabilities that come out and you have people leaving the team, all those kind of things. So you need to prepare for constant change in your platform as well, constant experimentation. That's my take on it anyway.
Yeah, so handling the platform like a product so that evolves just like any application that we build. Yeah, I think that's important because now that more and more companies are moving to Kubernetes, I think we are learning also more about the experience of working with Kubernetes. So there are new tools that are developed in order to maybe solve some issues that we might experience today or to make the experience both for developers and operators better. So definitely it's good to look into the CNCF landscape, the tech radar also to know what is out there so that we have a stable foundation that we can build our business on but also we can take advantage of new technologies if they provide some additional value to the business.
So where do you think things are moving? Is there anything out in the horizon that really excites you that you want to talk about?
So we didn't mention GitOps and delivery processes. That's that's one of those. It sounds like a buzzword a lot, but I think it really provides value. So having this approach where we decouple the continuous delivery part, where we take the application, we run the auto test, we package it as a container image, and then the deployment part that happens via pull request. So we get all the nice properties that we have in traditional application development. So we can do peer reviews, we can have a pull request, we have traceability, also auditing of the changes. And then when a pull request is approved, automatically from the cluster, we have a component like FluxCD or ArgoCD that realizes, oh, there's a new change. So let's make sure that the new change is applied to Kubernetes. I think that's a really powerful concept that more than technological change, I think it's more a cultural change. Because maybe we are not used to do that. We are used to have different steps with different also governance approval along the way. So I think that the mindset for using GitOps needs to change a bit. But once you embrace that approach, I think it becomes really powerful. It improves the quality. And yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I think GitOps as well. I'm adopting it in all my projects. And I think it's the way to go. I've personally chosen Flux because I think that's the simplest one for me to grasp. And it's like the revolution that infrastructure as code was for infrastructure, GitHub is the same for application deployments. So yeah, totally agree on Flux and GitOps in general. I'm also kind of curious to see what kind of higher level abstractions that people are now building. Like we have a framework coming out of Microsoft called Dapper. Like what is that good for in a microservice setting? We have something called Temporal from some people from Uber and another company. Like there's some higher level microservices frameworks that are now becoming more prevalent. There's also something called Wasm Cloud that is, I think that's higher level abstractions for microservices. I think that's the next thing. Like you mentioned, what is the application and how do we deploy it? And they come with built-in features, for instance, traceability and maybe message queue and message passing for remote procedure calls. That comes built-in in the framework. And I think that's really, really exciting. And right now, it's like in that exploratory phase. So we have all of those different ideas popping up, and now we just have to wait and see what sticks.
Yeah, another thing that I'm really excited to see how it will develop is serverless, because so far we associate serverless usually with Lambda functions. So that's really maybe a very different way of thinking and designing applications. But we can take advantage of serverless technologies even with more standard containers application. So for example, Knative offers that capability. So you don't have to use a specific framework provided by a cloud vendor, but you have a sort of a neutral interface to have, for example, the scaling to zero feature. So if there's no request, there's no reason to keep the application alive. And I think, I'd like to see how will that evolve also to be embraced for more standard applications, not just functions.
Yeah, serverless is also super exciting. I haven't used it that much, to be honest. And it is a different paradigm to work in. And like it's going from imperative to functional programming, or going from HTTP synchronous communication to message-based communication. So yeah, serverless is fun, and let's see where it takes us.
I think we're getting close to the end here, but just before we finish, I was wondering if you have any definite do's and don'ts you would like to share, or any fun war stories.
War stories is, well, when you build platforms yourself and you build applications at the same time, you sometimes get into difficult situations that you weren't expecting, like as a consequence of running on Kubernetes. For instance, I had a problem a couple of months ago where one of my services was not resolving a DNS name in my cluster. and like it was my log-on service that couldn't talk to my IDP. That was a problem for me. And I'd identified that the problem was that the version of Core DNS that we were running had a bug. Like we we upgraded Core DNS and like we had a bug. And the bug was actually inside DNS. And those kind of problems were kind of new to me. Like before Kubernetes, I never really cared about DNS. Like it's something that we have, but it always works, right?
It's there.
It's there and it works. But now because of the high complexity of running a service inside of Kubernetes that is talking to Core DNS inside of Kubernetes that is actually talking to another DNS resolver outside of Kubernetes, like there's new communication pathways there and caching at different levels that can actually impact your service. So that's a war story for me in general terms. And I found the bug and reported it, and the guy from Core DNS, he was like, huh, that's impossible. It wasn't impossible, but just it was just really, 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 really unlikely. So it wasn't actually impossible, but really unlikely.
That sounds like fun. I mean, even Facebook have troubles with DNS, right?
BGP, but
Some do's and don'ts. So one initial step when moving to the cloud, specifically to Kubernetes, is containerizing applications. So my advice in that regard is not trying to containerize whatever you have at the moment, depending on where it is. So if you have, I don't know, maybe 10 applications deployed on one Wildfly server, don't try to containerize the whole thing because you will regret it soon. It's important to keep mapping like one application, one container. I think that that's extremely important. And maybe another tip. So when moving to the cloud, try not to try to embrace the culture and the practices around cloud native, like DevOps, because the risk is to ending up having these silos where if you need something from the cloud, even if you switch to the cloud, you still have to go in Jira and open a ticket and wait for someone to do something about it. That's not really the cloud, because one of the features of the cloud is the self-service capabilities. So I think it's important to clarify which is the API and having a self-service experience for developers.
Yeah, and also embracing the community in general, like participate in meetups, participate in conferences, participate in open source, because that's where you really get the benefit. And you, like everybody else is kind of doing the same thing that you are and have maybe solved the problem that you're trying to solve. So look around you in your community and participate. I think that's also a key.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like I'm really excited about all the open source initiatives that are out there. Like a recent one, for example, VMware open sourced their Kubernetes platform. It's called VMware Tanzu Community Edition, totally open source and free. It was great and it worked really well. Mm-hmm. Like I remember the day that they announced it, I installed it and I used it the next day for a presentation demonstrating like deploying Spring Boot applications with Kubernetes. So it just worked without promise and I was really impressed. I think that's really being part of like the open source community is also contributing back.
Right.
I think it's really a key factor.
It is. Yes.
Okay, that's it. Thank you very much for spending some time with me. It was a lot of fun chatting with you. I hope you enjoyed it as well. And
It was nice.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech for lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.